y quedar en la calle. Estar preso solamente, no solamente la persona está sufriendo, la que está en la cárcel. Pasa arrastrando a muchos seres queridos.
El líder indígena consideró que la lucha por liberar a los injustamente presos no es fácil porque el sistema judicial fabrica cargos, pero subrayó que es necesario levantar la voz por todos ellos.
No cansarnos en la lucha. De alguna otra forma, tiene que escuchar el grito de la sociedad. Es eso lo que nos va a permitir. Muchas veces el gobierno, de tantos gritos que le va a estar molestando, también tiene que escuchar. Eso es lo que mi esperanza, y también que se tiene que revisar los expedientes. Aunque realmente en los expedientes se van a encontrar muchas personas ahí culpables, pero ya sé cómo se maneja todo, porque así me lo hicieron. O sea, me acusaban de 6 muertitos que nunca, jamás había disparado en un arma. Sin embargo, los expedientes estaban bien manipulados, y eso hasta ahorita sigue dándose.
Los 6 presos de San Pedro Tlanisco que lideraron la oposición a que el agua de su comunidad en el Estado de México fuera utilizada para el negocio de la floricultura fueron acusados de homicidio agravado. Aunque su detención ocurrió en 2003, se les condenó hasta noviembre del 2017. Néstor Salgado denunció que el gobierno mexicano acusa a los luchadores sociales de los peores delitos del orden común para privarlos por largo tiempo de su libertad.
Recriminamos ese patrón tan cruel que utilizan para encarcelarlos. No es justo que todos los activistas y luchadores sociales tengan los mismos delitos, así como delincuencia organizada, secuestros, asesinatos, violaciones y todos los delitos más fuertes como terrorismo, con tal de que no se les escape. Esa fabricación de delitos ya es un patrón.
La ahora senadora federal destaca que gracias a la fuerte solidaridad y al trabajo de periodistas honestos, expresos de conciencia han logrado su libertad y que ese esfuerzo debe multiplicarse para excarcelar a los detenidos injustamente.
Gracias a la lucha que ustedes han dado, nosotros somos el claro ejemplo del fruto de la lucha. Por eso tengo la esperanza de que nos sumemos cada vez más todos los activistas, todos los luchadores sociales y toda aquella persona con conciencia, a que peleemos y luchemos por la libertad de estas personas que injustamente están enterradas vivas, porque estar preso es estar enterrado vivo.
Néstor Salgado dijo que exigirá a las autoridades la revisión de todos los expedientes de los presos políticos.
El día jueves enviaré un comunicado al equipo de transición del presidente electo, a la Secretaría de Gobernación y a la Suprema Corte de Justicia, para que iniciemos los preparativos de una mesa interinstitucional para revisar cada caso o el estado procesal de cada uno de los presos políticos. Y con más orgullo y con más fuerza digo que de aquí adelante voy a visitar todas las cárceles del país, porque vamos a liberar a cada uno de esos presos de conciencia y cada uno de esos presos encarcelados injustamente porque no tengan para pagar un abogado o porque no tengan cómo defenderse.
Trinidad Ramírez, del Frente de los Pueblos en Defensa de la Tierra, en representación de su esposo Ignacio del Valle, injustamente encarcelado por el gobierno de Peña Nieto, exigió la liberación de todos los presos políticos.
Como organización, como Frente de Pueblos en Defensa de la Tierra, pero que también estamos convenciendo a otros mexicanos a que se unan a esta lucha. Y exigimos esa libertad a los presos de Tlanisco y a todos los presos políticos del país y de América Latina.
Para el Informativo Pacífica, reportó Norma Martínez.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre del Toshli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos. Thank you.
101.1 FM.
A $500 reward to the free radio friend. FRSC, Friendly Radio in Santa Cruz, reaches out for a new studio location. We need something urgently. If you provide us with that lead, we have for you $500. Contact us, FRSC at freakradio.org. Thank you for your help.
Off the realness, we be the infamous, you heard of us, official Queensbridge murderers, the mob comes equipped for warfare, beware of my crime family who got enough shots to share for all those who want to profile and pose, rock you in your face, stab your brain with your nose bone, you all alone in these streets, cousin, every man for theyself in his land, we be gunning, and keep them shook crews running, like they supposed to, they come around, but they never come close to, I can see it inside your face, you're in the wrong place, cowards like you just get their whole body laced up, with bullets. Such. Speak the wrong words, man, and you will get touched. Right. You can put your whole army against my team, and I guarantee you it'll be your very last time breathing. Your simple words, you don't move me. You're minor, we major. You're all up in the game and don't deserve to be a player. Don't make me have to call your name out. Your crew is featherweight. My gunshots will make you levitate. I'm only 19, but my mind is older. When the things get for real, my warm heart turns cold. Another nigga deceased, another story gets told. It ain't nothing really. Hey, yo, Dutch, fuck the Philly. So I can get my mind off these yellow bags. While they still alive, I don't know, go figure. Meanwhile, back in Queens, the realness and foundation. If I die, I couldn't choose a better location. When the slugs penetrate, you feel a burning sensation. Getting closer to God in a tight situation now. Take these words home and think it through. Or the next rhyme I write might be about you. Sunday shook, cause ain't no such things as halfway crooks. Scared to death and scared to look. They shook, cause ain't no such things as halfway crooks. Scared to death and scared to look. Living the life that of diamonds and guns. There's numerous ways you can choose to earn funds, funds. Some get shot, locked down, and turn nuns. Cowardly hearts and straight up shook ones, shook ones. Hey, the crook's son, crook's son. He just shook ones.
Don't make a smile of my head, that's me, but I open my eyes to take a peek. To find that I don't smile, I had a stinging, 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 on the trail of the living. I believe I love the living, I love the living, I love the living, I love the living,
I'm gonna go
And up next, it's another edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Today is October 11th, 2018, just one day away from what used to be called National Indigenous People Slaughter Day, or at least that's what I called it, or Columbus Day, as others used to call it. Columbus Day, of course, was a couple days ago by the new slip-year holiday to on the Monday after the weekend approach by the government. But I'll be playing a little bit about this and that, but mostly trying to zip into what's happening in Santa Cruz. So zip with me if you wish, and also we'll hear a few cuts from some older stuff from Roy Zimmerman, whose stuff has finally appeared in my mailbox. Thank you, Roy, and Roy's distributors. Though I don't know if you'd be too happy my playing it on free radio, but hey, this is free radio, not We Ask for Permission radio. So there you go. Stay tuned, and we'll go.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And today we're going to have a number of social significance songs, mostly from 14 years ago. And so I'm working off an album that Roy Zimmerman put out in 2004, called Faulty Intelligence, about the Iraqi invasion by Bush and the neocons back then. Now, of course, we have had subsequent invasions and continuations of the Iraqi war by the Obamatoids and the Clintonoids and the Trumpoids, all those folks together, and they all need to be lumped in the same sack, pretty much, at least as far as their foreign policy goes, and to some extent, domestic funding and real priorities and real sources of support go as well. And that includes the Bernie Sanders segments of the Democratic Party, for me. And I would go even further, but I won't at this point even talk about that. But that's some of what the music is going to be played on this show. Some selections, and I hope you enjoy them. I'm going to try to get off early this afternoon. I'm recording it the same afternoon of the show to a demonstration which may be still going on. I kind of doubt it when the show airs at 6. And that's a rally against big money and predatory landlords, at least according to the flyer that I ran into at the Conscience and Action meeting, actually just after that meeting. At the, it's on the bulletin board of the coffee house where we had our meeting. And we'll pause on that one. Of course, I mean the Sub Rosa. And what it stated was, rally against big money and predatory landlords, October 11th. It was a much longer flyer, but it also noted at 4:40 today at Trescany Street Park, there'll be a march to 1612 Mission Street. That's 1612 Mission Street for a rally by the Students United with Renters. And the number, in case you want to reach them, is 831-471-7842. In fact, I think I'm going to give them a call right now and see if they have any updates for me on what's going on there, because it may still be happening, or at least maybe you can learn more about similar actions against other landlords who are profiteering away while the people who have lived here and are now desperately trying to cling to their rentals are watching their fingernails get ripped off as they fall by the wayside. Let's see.
Hello. Please state your name after the tone, and Google Voice will try to connect you.
Hey, I'm Robert Norris of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're giving them a call now and seeing if we can get through to Students United with Renters. But we may not be in luck. Who knows? It goes on. I think we'll leave it there for the moment. Looks like they're not answering.
Hello. You've reached the voicemail for Students United with Renters in Santa Cruz. If you have questions about your situation regarding your landlord, your lease agreement, or any of your tenants' rights in the state of California or in the city of Santa Cruz, please leave a message with some details about your situation and a good phone number to call you back at. For all other inquiries, please leave us a message, your name, your number, and a good time to call back. Thanks very much.
And this sounds like Zav. Hi, Zav. This is Robert of Free Radio. I'm calling you on the Thursday when your rally against big money and predatory landlords is slated for. I thought you might want to give us a sort of an update and a shout-out. Also interested if the rally is going to be continuing past 6, in which case people listening to the broadcast could, if they choose, join it. If not, wondering what's happening in the future with Students United with Renters. If you want to give me a call back, I'm at 423-4833, as usual. And good luck with the rally. Maybe I'll see you there if I can get this show done in time. Good luck.
I'm not on the space.
Oops, sorry about that. Let's roll into the interview that I did a few days ago when I was picking up Street Spirit in Berkeley. Street Spirit, as you may know, is the newspaper homeless people sell for coffee money and not to get kicked out of Denny's or wherever they happen to be trying to roost as they avoid, getting trespass tickets, getting obstructing the sidewalk tickets, getting even the occasional camping citation, which Andy Mills apparently is assuring the community isn't happening. Apparently some agencies in this jurisdiction are still doing it. At least that's what I'm finding. Trying to get some more information on that. And if you have information about camping tickets recently, do give me a call on the Huff line. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. But let's jump up to Berkeley. If you want to read what the Street Spirit newspaper is up to these days, you can check out thestreetspirit.org. Or perhaps it's thestreetspirit.com. I could have that wrong, but it's one of the two. So give it a try online. Or look for the Street Spirit at the Sub Rosa Cafe mentioned before. Or if you find me running around town in a station wagon-y looking vehicle covered with bumper stickers, that's a good place to get it as well. We're also looking for writers. We're looking for people, if you want to sell it, make some money, you can sell it for $2 a copy and keep whatever you make. Talk to me, and I'll pass them on to you. It's supposed to be legal in Santa Cruz, and I haven't heard of anyone being arrested for it, though I want to know, again, any reports about that that's coming in. Let's jump to Berkeley, though, for a quick listen-in with Irene, who I ran into on the streets and actually met for the first time at that point a couple of days ago.
With Irene Clayton.
And Irene, you're distributing Street Spirit. Used to be on the streets, are no longer.
Now I'm not on the streets. I have an appointment now. And
how long did it take you to get that?
Well, it didn't take me that long to get it.
That's good.
I really like just speak about how long it took. but it didn't take me no time, because I got off my ass and took care of my business, and then I was blessed with an appointment, and now I'm so happy. I'm so happy, I want to cry. Sometimes, a lot of times I do cry.
You're smiling more than crying.
I was out here, I was sleeping in a van for 7 years, and...
That's a long time.
It was hard. You know, it's still hard, but I'm blessed right now. I don't know if that's what you want to hear, but that's what happened.
I want to hear whatever the truth is.
I'm 63 years old. I'm 63 years old.
You don't look 63, kid. Are you lying to me? 52, perhaps? 41?
I was born in 1954, December 22nd. Now I have one son and four daughters. I have 17 grandchildren.
Originally from?
Oakland, California.
Wow.
That's where I'm from, and I live in Oakland, California. I stay on Kirkham in some apartments down there on Mandela.
You like Berkeley as a place to check out?
I like Berkeley very much because, you know, I was introduced to these papers right here.
Street Spirit.
Street Spirits, I'll introduce to these.
How long have you been selling the Street Spirit?
I've been selling Street Spirits for like 8 or 9 years.
Have you noticed any change in how Street Spirit is received by the customers?
What you mean?
In other words, is it more popular, less popular?
It's good to me every day.
Now, I understand the price has gone up to $2.
I love it.
And is that working for you?
It's working for me real good. It's like if they don't have no money or anything like that, I tell them they can have the paper. Yeah. And a lot of them say they don't want it. Then they turn around and take it.
I see. Now, how many...
Hey, friend.
I
met a lot of nice people out here since I've been coming. I have a little difficulty sometimes with my color.
What's your income today, for example?
My income is good.
I mean, let me put it this way. How many people have actually been able to kick down $2 for this?
For my paper?
Yes.
Oh, a lot of people's.
10, 100, 500.
You mean within like a day?
Within the last day.
But I just got here.
Oh.
I do good every day.
An average day.
I do every day like maybe 40 or 50 or 60.
That's pretty good.
And then sometimes I might make 100. Because there's so many people know me now. And they like my personality. And I like them. That's all I can say. Are you going to put me on the radio?
Yeah.
What's your station?
Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'll give you a card.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hear the radio out here.
Okay
if I don't hear y'all hear. They'll hear me.
You have to go online. Yeah, they'll hear you.
They'll hear me.
Yeah, you won't
my
be able to hear it.
My name is Irene Clayton. I'm going to show my daughter here about it because she have all of that equipment and stuff like that.
And it'll be archived so she can find it.
Yes.
My
is
number,
what?
It's archived. So if you want to find
it's on here?
You call me at this number,
uh-huh.
And I'll tell you how she can get it. It's also mentioned on here.
Okay.
In small print.
So your name on here?
Yes. That's my
I can't
right
see
there.
It right now. My eye's not that great. I'm a diabetic.
It says Robert Norris.
I became a diabetic out here.
Yeah.
And I lost my eyesight.
But you've got some great earrings.
I lost my eyesight.
Yeah.
Then my eyesight came back. I started crying and praying. And then it came right back.
I've been eating less sugar.
I don't eat that much of sugar, starch, yeah. And stuff. I take care of myself. I take care of me.
Well, Irene, I'm Robert. This is
Robert.
Ursula.
Ursula? I can't talk to that one.
All right. Thank you. Anything you want to add, Irene?
Thank you all very much for taking your time with me and everything. And let the world, people know that it can be done. But you got to get off your ass and do it because it's not going to come to you. You got to go to it because it's there. It's there for you right in front of your face and you don't even know it.
Thank you, Irene.
All right.
To follow up on that, we have on the line Amber of Berkeley, just awakened from a comfortable sleep by my rude ring. Hi, Amber.
Hi.
And, you know, you've been in the papers lately, I notice. City Council fluffing around town. Are you still comfortably ensconced in your van? Are your colleagues still around, or have people been dispersed?
Oh, yeah, we're still together. We're sticking it out.
And have things changed much since we last talked? I know that you were originally further down by the waterfront and then kind of driven here and there and kind of came to roost some blocks away from the waterfront. Has anything changed since then?
Yep. Well, we're still at the same intersection we were at last time I spoke to you. We're at the 8th and Harrison Streets in Berkeley.
And are you still in the same numbers?
Yep. Absolutely.
And has there anything, have you learned anything more about folks in vehicles elsewhere in Berkeley or folks who are outside generally or anything happening in Berkeley that, you know, think might be of interest to us down here?
Well, not so much in Berkeley. Richmond has reached out to us because they like our proposal. and a guy who does homeless advocacy in Richmond basically wants us to pitch our idea to Richmond so that Richmond can use it, Richmond and Contra Costa County can use it for Contra Costa County's homeless individuals, as opposed to Alameda County, which is, you know, where we live and where we're from and where we've been doing advocacy, so...
Can you summarize for us again the proposal, which I think you talked about in past interviews, or maybe I read it aloud, but what are the main points?
The main points, I'd say probably limiting participation by checking records and whatnot to verify people's genuine strong ties to Berkeley. You know, the excuses they give for why they don't do anything, in other words, around where we are, they being other people outside of our community, is they do something that's not, you know, criminalizing, basically, and they allow homeless people to participate, and homeless people move here in droves. Sure that this is the place to get whatever wonderful thing that was.
Let me interrupt you and ask you, have you found a lot of RV people moving into Berkeley because it's such a wonderful place for RV people to be?
Nope, I definitely have not.
And so this whole claim is, it sounds like you're saying it's a spurious claim, it's phony.
Absolutely.
And so aren't you kind of... catering to their false narrative by saying, oh, we'll assure you that only the people in Berkeley are getting the permission to be here. I mean, isn't that kind of playing along with their nonsense?
Yep, absolutely.
So what are you doing? Why are you playing along with their nonsense?
Well, actually, what I intend to do is this upcoming city council meeting, I believe it's on the 16th, I plan to point out to them that their constant claim of other people's homeless individuals moving here is not only false, it's a new claim for their own purposes, but Berkeley has a history of allowing Berkeley Food and Housing Project, a certain organization out here, to be in charge of housing homeless people from the streets of Berkeley. Now, it is pretty common knowledge with anybody who's participated in anything with the City of Berkeley and Berkeley Food and Housing Project, that they tend to only place people, when they do, quote-unquote, house somebody, they tend to only house them in other cities. But Berkeley Food and Housing Project doesn't stay up on sort of outreach or anything they're supposed to do, really, for the past 6 months. So...
Say that again. I'm sorry, Amber. I wasn't quite clear on that.
Okay. Berkeley Food and Housing Project is the name of the nonprofit that houses people for Berkeley.
Gotcha.
Okay. Berkeley Food and Housing Project is known for finding housing for people that is in other nearby cities, except not Berkeley.
Now, does that mean it takes people who are in Berkeley and kind of exits them from Berkeley, or it takes people who are in Richmond and entrances them into Berkeley, or some other way?
Exactly. They take people from Berkeley and they exit them to other cities,
mm-hmm.
where they're supposed to be receiving case management services from Berkeley Food and Housing Project, but they do not. Berkeley Food and Housing Project is notorious for just cutting their support to people.
And have you researched this personally, or are you conveying what is, you think, general knowledge, or do you have a particular source you would suggest people go to get documentation on this?
I have definitely witnessed it personally.
How many times?
To my knowledge, 3 that I can think of.
And have you noticed any other times when people were actually housed in Berkeley by this group?
No, definitely not. I've never seen them have anybody in Berkeley, no.
Well, you don't want them to alarm the people in the hills, after all.
Yeah, of course, no. They're bringing in more. They're bringing in reinforcements, no. People are just poor everywhere.
Have you heard much about proposed legislation to make it more difficult for people to sit down on the streets who aren't in vehicles, or for that matter, for anybody, whether they live indoors or outdoors, in terms of getting rid of the visible homeless population so that the merchants can feel more comfy in dealing with the tourists and other people who are in the more upscale side of things.
Yes.
And is that actually happening at City Council in terms of new laws, or is there increased enforcement of old laws, or what's going on? If you know.
There's discussion of increased enforcement of old laws, but there has yet to start city enforcement, thankfully.
I gotcha. Is there anything else you want to add? I realize I kind of dragged you out of a comfortable sleep, hopefully a comfortable sleep, and, you know, you sound a little drowsy there. So I think most of what you said has come through. Anything you want to add or clarify? Or now's your time to denounce me, if you wish. Anything else you want to say?
Nope, not that I can think of offhand. We're going to keep at it until the administration, be it the mayor, city manager, whoever in Berkeley, realizes that this is a growing problem. You know, the people are not the problem. The problem is housing and availability of housing for people who make, you know, little to nothing per month.
Sounds good. Thank you, Amber.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, my son asked me today, is this another Vietnam? I said, son, you know it's, well, it's, no, it's, go ask your mom. It brought back such precious memories of my days in business school, my favorite school. Then my wife said, hey, I'm worried 'cause they're starting to deploy. I said, honey, don't be silly, we'll send someone else's boy. 'Cause we all make sacrifices, and in a war, that's what the poor people are for. I said, fight on for freedom's sake, long as I don't shake and bake.
Chicken hawk.
Call me a chicken hawk.
Chicken hawk.
Proud to be a chicken hawk. A loyal armchair jock. Let's check that Lockheed stock. I didn't walk the walk, but I could talk the talk. Just because you might have seen some action there on the front line, don't insult the guys who served their country here on the back nine. I was gung-ho, gunning-ho, but I just had other priorities, like feeling more at ease. I said, bomb them to hell, but I'd rather not be Kentucky Fried.
Chicken hawk.
Call me a chicken hawk. Proud to be a chicken hawk. Watch while I bring the mock. Recede to all Iraq. I didn't walk the walk, but I can talk the talk.
Bark, 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 bark.
Why did the chicken cross the road? Well, I'll tell you part. The chicken crossed the road to join the Texas Air National Guard. Ashcroft, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Cheney, O'Reilly, Hannity, Hume, Bennett, Crystal, Limbaugh, Hastert, Gingrich, Lott, DeLay, Bach, 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 Bach.
Chicken hawk.
Call me a chicken hawk.
Chicken hawk.
Proud to be a chicken hawk. Watch while I bring the mark. Recede to all in rock. I didn't walk the walk, but I could talk the talk.
Bark, 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 bark.
Let me make this perfectly clear. The bark stops here.
And that was Chicken Hawk from Roy Zimmerman's 2004 album, Faulty Intelligence. Why play that rather than more recent stuff? Well, first I played some of his recent stuff already last show. And Democrats have become more chicken hawky than ever. And unfortunately, our friend Zimmerman seems to have kind of rolled along with them, at least in terms of dumping on Trump for this Russiagate stuff, which it's fine to dump on Trump, do it all the time, but don't use it to justify a foreign policy and an increase in anti-Russian paranoia that can only lead to worse things. And that's been my view, and I stick to it. And I like to look back at times when, at least verbally, the Dems and the Libs, probably because they were out of power, although they're still out of power, even more so now, criticized somewhat from the left what was going on in Iraq and abroad. Now, of course, with Obama starting all these wars and Trump continuing and escalating them, you don't hear too much from them, particularly since one of the big candidates, Clinton, was herself a war hawk. And the next interview is another one from Berkeley with Derek Morris, who talks about his legal case. It's a little obscure and it's a little distant from Santa Cruz, but I ran into Derek in a wheelchair. He was in the wheelchair, I wasn't, outside a movie theater where I was coming out of a movie, and we chatted for a bit. He was panhandling on the streets, and he gave me this interview. I'm here in Berkeley, and it's about 6:05, talking with
Derek Morris.
Hey, Derek, we're here in front of the Who's He What's This Theater. I just came out, and you mentioned a court case you've been involved with.
Yes, I've paralyzed now since 2014, and I couldn't get an attorney to fight the case because I think the feds are interfering because they are responsible for my paralysis. So I went to school, I studied paralegal, and I'm here prosecuting the case, and the judge dismissed my case unfairly, unjustly.
Name of the judge?
Yeah, she's a... what's her name? Kalaskowski, Victoria.
You're in a wheelchair as we speak.
Yeah, Victoria Kalaskowski. Now, she gave me an order. I asked for an extension of time to be able to, you know, respond to the order and amend my complaint. And I asked for extension of time. And so while the motion is pending to be heard, she dismissed my case, saying that I hadn't filed my documents in time. So I'm appealing it now. And also, some had already been in the jurisdiction of the appeals court because she made an order that I had appealed. She dismissed those cases too.
Which
she
had the lawsuit.
Yeah, she has no jurisdiction over that case. And in the appeals court now, they're taking all my documents.
Now, what is the nature of the lawsuit?
Well, it's a malpractice.
And this is against an attorney?
The hospital, the doctors, the various people, they, you know, falsely imprisoned me, they misdiagnosed my case intentionally and so on. So it's there and they're taking out my documents. Once the clerk of the court came out and asked me for my documents, he said, we need some more documents. I'm going to give you my documents and I'll check on the record. They changed the record, so he took the evidence I had of the original and threw that away and put in some bogus thing. And I have copies of it, so I don't know what's going on here. But
we're talking about a local court here in Oakland?
Right here in Oakland, yeah. So injustice is so pervasive, and it's a problem because civilizations that have been this unjust just disappeared. And I'm not sure if they want to disappear, but I think they need to start, you know, being just in the deliberations and fair and all this if they really want to exist, you know.
Now, what was the date of the incident that injured you?
Well, twice in 14, I went to the hospital claiming my spine was hurting me, and they said I was having a heart attack on both occasions, different hospitals. So
here in Berkeley?
No, in Oakland, the Alta Bates and the Highland Hospital. Mm-hmm. And 90 days after the first, you know, episode of pain, I collapsed in the street and paralyzed. Took me to the hospital, delayed the surgery, and then wouldn't even let me go, keeping me in the hospital. I had to run away from the hospital. So it's real bizarre how they treat folks here.
Wow. And you are, it looks like, are you outside generally at night, or are you a place to live?
Well, I live in my van, but right now I just panhandle for a living because, again, it's so many problems.
Any hassles for living in your vehicle?
Any what?
Problems with cops and et cetera.
I don't have a crowd. I don't mess up the place. I don't attract the attention. I just go to my van, sleep, leave, go to school, come out here, panhandle, and that's about it.
What kind of schooling are you doing?
Well, I'm going to add on some more degrees. I have 10 college degrees right now, and I'm doing 3 more at City College. I did paralegal communication studies, and I'm doing computer programming now. So that's all I can do, stay busy and stay out of trouble.
And what kind of response are you getting from the community regarding
you know, fundraising through panhandling?
Well, they're very generous here in Berkeley, and they're very helpful, and I'm thankful for that, because without it, I don't know how I would have survived. But, yeah, the people here in Berkeley are very wonderful people, blessed people, great.
Well, I notice you are of darker skin than I am. Has that had any consequences for you throughout the course of this case?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, when you're black in this country, in fact, I think my whole problem is because I'm black. I have more education than most people in the country, and I have views that are contrary to theirs, which is the real deal, more reliable and valid points. And they don't like it, so if they were to kill me, they'll shut me up and be able to continue going, destroying the country. I mean, when you try to protect America, they kill you. So being black and trying to protect America, that's a no-no. So it's real ugly, man.
How is your connection with the local community here? Are you simply a cipher among a huge crowd? Are you known by some folks? Do you have a supportive community?
Oh, yeah, it's very supportive. On the guys, there are many different types of people out here doing different things, but they see through my stuff. They see that I'm a guy that's trying to do the right thing, not on drugs, not on stupid stuff, but necessity and need the money to do important things, buy books, buy food, buy my transportation, pay my insurance, my van, and stuff like that. And they're very responsive.
Well, I know that recently, I don't know if you know Amber, she went to city council to complain about how people in vehicles are being treated down near the beach, the marina. Have you had any sense of how people in other vehicles are being treated by police?
I'm not aware of that. I'm isolated. I just park by myself on a street in Richmond, and right by a 24/7 operation of McDonald's. So it also adds security to my living, because if I were to add, I'm having problems with the feds. I think the FBI is on my case, and they go into my van and they take my college degree and they change my name. They put my middle name as my first name as my middle name. So where I'm at, they also go in there, but to say like burn up the van or to blow it up or do something strange, I think that where I'm parked is a little deterrent, and I have a little bit of security right there, but it's awful, man.
Low profile.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add for people who, well, I don't know, are listening in Santa Cruz? We're, of course, far away, but...
Well, I tell you what, when you're a minority in this place, you don't have access to the media. And if you try to contact them, they try not to see. In other words, just how they're treating people up in Washington, how they gave them nigger treatment. The nigger treatment is that they don't believe you. Your story is always something subject to be verified and a whole bunch of other things. Or they have evidence that could support it and just intentionally don't want to really give any support and they'll give you this long talk. Well, you know, we can't prove this and all. It's going to take too long and whatever. But I just was at a meeting at the university here. The meeting was against Trump, the journalism in the Trump era. In Trump era. And, you know, I asked them, I said, look, I got a lot of education. I got more education than anybody in the country. I need some help. And they just, they say that I boast and whatever. And then I give them my card and my education. Again, that's another problem. So I'm not sure what they really want. I mean, you're doing the right thing. You're avoiding trouble. You're going to school. You're getting a good education. That's a problem. You get killed for that.
They don't give a shit, in essence.
Yeah. That's true. So, you know.
Talking with, if you wish to say,
Dr. Derek Morris.
Thank you, Dr. Morris.
Yeah,
appreciate
thanks.
That. I'm Robert.
I have on my card, you see, I have, you know, I have a YouTube channel there, Student Lawyer. Google me on the net at Student Lawyer, you'll see my stuff. But I could also, you know, hook up with you and email you and see if we could get some stuff going, because I'm telling you, man, we could put some stuff out there that even federal politics, I think that things that they're doing, basically, I have a different spin on what they should be doing. Homelessness, well, the environment.
That's the main thing we focus on.
Yeah.
If you're not talking about homelessness in Berkeley or what life, justice for people on the streets or no justice for people on the streets.
Because it's not only a local problem, it's a federal problem, because some of these folks are there, they were taken away by foster care people, which federal law covers that too. Federal government participated in giving these states monies to help them, and it's a big scam. So they take these kids, put them in foster care to get some money from the feds, and then at 18 these kids gone, they don't have no family. Plus some of them were in military and they're accustomed to this moving on, no kind of stability, then they end up with a mental problems and come out, they can't hold stuff, they're on drugs, they end up on the street. So many different problems. So I think the state, the county, city, and the feds, everybody should participate in solving this homelessness. The environment too, you know, I think that we need to reclaim the deserts of the world. This global warming, and I agree with Trump, they're just talking crap. They're trying to obstruct our economy by this kind of cars.
Our president, Don Trump, do that? How can you say that?
Well, no, at least that's one thing, right? Because you see, the others are part of secret societies, and they're just saying what these people want them to say. But he seemed to be really interested in this country. I mean, this is one thing I agree with him on. And that
Trump you're talking about?
Yeah, that's one thing I agree with him on,
and
the environment.
Did you vote for Trump yourself?
No, I was going to vote for Hillary. Because, you know, she know Obama, and I thought...
I hate them both. So
they would have helped me out and so on, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, man, we could hook up and talk about a lot of stuff, and I think that you could draw some attraction to your station, because, I mean, if the word gets out there that Obama's a fraud, I think that would be a shake-up. We could get the federal government to do a special prosecutor. Man, you'd be seeing some crap that would come down.
Well, if anybody would have done that, Trump would have, because he's, you know, in his own way, he has his own style, which he says, fuck the Republicans, I'll do what I want. As you know, he beat all the other Republicans out. Let's pick it up again. If you want to call me, I'll be down in Santa Cruz, and I'll do some more. It is, but, you know, I'm reachable by phone.
And I could come down and appear in your stuff, and we could make sure that we get some juicy stuff going.
Okay, remember, we're talking about a tiny pirate radio station.
It doesn't matter. As long as you have an audience and you could get some traction, you get some, you know, we talk this, you get somebody to tell Trump to, this is something that you need to put a prosecutor.
Don to come to Santa Cruz, that would be interesting.
You know, put a prosecutor, what we call it again, special prosecutor in it, Mom.
Special prosecutor.
We'll solve a lot of problems here, Mom. My stuff, here now, I was asking for $100 million for my paralysis, bro. Because if you believe that I helped a woman to run this country, we're talking about at least $1,000 trillion I saved America, right? It was going to collapse in 08, bro.
Yeah,
and if I didn't help him, it would have been over. The world also would have collapsed. So that for me to just get nothing and just this little email here, it's so sad, bro.
It's a bunch of shit.
It's so sad.
And we have been talking with?
Dr. Derek Morris.
Thank you, Dr. Derek Morris.
Undaunted, but perhaps somewhat bedraggled politician from, are you a politician, Wes, from Salinas?
I'm a dropout, man.
Well, that's...
turn on and drop out.
You dropped out of the right thing, I think, when you talk about the Salinas shitty council mayoral bullshit. But you've got a real quick update for me, I hope. And what is that?
They did have a city council meeting yesterday about an MOU with the city and the county to enter a minimum of understanding to open building sites for... temporary shelter and a permanent transitionary housing complex, so two sites, and so there were people for and against, and then even before that, there was, people got their time cut, basically, is what happened, because there were an awful lot of people there. The vote was 6-1, with one council member, Tony Barrera, saying no, and... I guess the mayor actually, so there was a little bit of extra drama on top of that, because before that, during public comment, there was quite a few people who showed up to voice their concerns about traffic safety and code enforcement of parking on their own property, three cars on their own property. And after about three or four of those people, he asked the audience, well, raise your hand, who else is going to speak on the same issue? And then he's like, Mr. Sandoval, you wrote all their speeches, right? And just checking, you know, so it was like, after he went through all this rigmarole of talking about, rules of decorum and this is appropriate or else you'll be escorted out by the police. And it's like, you know, what kind of consequence is he going to get? Who's going to censure him?
Well, what was actually happening that caused him to mention the rules of decorum? Anything particular?
Apparently now a very standard operating procedure at the beginning of public comment to cite the rules. I mean, it was a very large crowd and an awful lot of people, probably their first time. So who knows who's going to be respectful or not, and it's about the homeless stuff. So that may have been, who was more directed to.
I guess the question is, are people following these so-called rules of decorum? Because... rules of decorum are advisory, even no matter how many At times, the mayor bangs his gavel, you know, and flicks his wrist and calls out the, you know, the sergeant at arms. They're advisory, according to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in the famous Norse versus City of Santa Cruz case, which was mentioned recently in an article I'm actually about to read for the show here in Los Angeles. LA is trying to pass a law that will, bully further audiences there that are not just engaging in rude behavior or, as we say, outspoken behavior at city councils, but are actually disrupting the meetings intentionally because they're so pissed with what the LA City Council is and isn't doing. So I'm just wondering, in Salinas, are people actually disrupting the meeting, as say, stopping the meeting from going, or is the mayor just insisting that everybody do the Sieg Heil and maintain with their hands in their laps and say nothing while he proceeds with the business as his staff has told him to do?
The latter.
I see. Anything else before I roll, because I'm going to cut you short today there, Wes White.
Okay, well, good luck, have fun, and let me know how things turn out.
I will, and maybe I'll see you one of these days sooner than you think. There are street spirits awaiting you in Monterey.
Excellent. I'll go pick them up.
All right, actually, it's Marina, I think, with the infamous Becky Johnson.
Beggar Backer?
The Beggar Backer herself. You take care, man.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye. And that was Wes White. You can find him online. If you want to look at his videos, of which he has plenty, you can go to the YouTube channel and look for John, and then the second word, Doe 14K. Or is it 13K? It's one of those two Ks, but, try experimenting and see which is which.
I'm gonna ride on that glory-bound train. I'm gonna ride on that glory-bound train. Oh, Lordy, I'm gonna ride on that glory-bound train.
And that concludes my statement, honored members of the press. And now I'll take a few hard-hitting questions. Yes. Sir, you say we have a right to torture, defying international convention. Won't you tell us, sir, how you support your contention? Doug, I'm glad you asked, and may I mention, Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. Now you tell me how many pecks of pickled peppers Peter Piper picked. Four. I'm gonna ride on that glory-bound train, oh Lordy. I'm gonna ride on that glory-bound train. I'm gonna ride on that glory-bound train, oh Lordy. I'm gonna ride on that glory-bound train.
And that was Glory Bound Train from Zimmerman's Faulty Intelligence. Your turn to Free Radio. We ain't faulty intelligence. We're cool intelligence, or right on intelligence, and hopefully intelligent intelligence. Who knows? We're at 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, and we're archived on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website at huffsantacruz.org. That's where you can find me and the show and lots of other voices, too. So here's a story, it's shorter than the one I read earlier, ran into it a few days ago. It's from the City News Service, not sure who they are, but they're an online service. The headline is, LA City Council moves to ban disruptors from future meetings. And here's the story. The LA City Council on Tuesday unanimously approved rule changes aimed at cracking down on people who repeatedly disrupt council or committee meetings by banning them from attending some future sessions. Critics, including the American Civil Liberties Union, blasted the rule changes, which required a two-thirds vote, as a potential infringement on free speech rights. The new rules, which will go into effect on January 1st, ban members of the public from attending a certain number of meetings based on the frequency of their ejections. A handful of people are routinely ejected from council or committee meetings for violating rules, including yelling out or being disruptive when it is not their turn to speak. It is not uncommon for them to be ejected from multiple meetings in one day. The council's current rules allow for someone to be kicked out for being disruptive, but only from that specific meeting. Under the new rules, if someone is kicked out of a meeting more than once on a day or the following business day, she or he will be excluded from attending all council and committee meetings for the remainder of the day and for the following business day. If that person continues to come back and get ejected within a certain number of days, the exclusion could continue to escalate all the way up to 6 business days. The new rules are the latest development in an ongoing conflict the council has had with public speakers who push the boundaries of decorum with racist, sexist, or vulgar comments. Offenders often get kicked out of meetings for failing to stop speaking after their allotted time or by causing a disruption in the audience when it is not their turn to speak. The conflicts can lead to bizarre interactions, such as when a council member in the middle of a serious conversation about city issues must pause to admonish a member of the audience to stop playing with a puppet, making animal noises, or waving their hands in the air. That sounds like the Santa Cruz City Council. In previous discussions during City Council sessions, members have worried about how to handle disruptions while adhering to open meetings laws, including the Brown Act. The council lost a 2013 federal free speech lawsuit by two men who were repeatedly kicked out of council meetings for violating public comment rules, not to mention yours truly. No council member spoke about the rule changes before the vote. The final tally was 14-0 with only Councilman Mike Bonin absent. The overall point is we are sensitive to people's First Amendment rights, and freedom of speech, but this is not about that, Rick Cola, a spokesman for the City Council, Jose Huizar, told City News Services last month. Everybody has a right to say what they want to say, of course only for a minute and a half or 2 minutes. That's my addition. This is about creating chaos at a government body meeting. Actually, it's about offending the City Council and making comments from the audience when you're denied the ability to make them, except for a very, very, very brief amount of time. And it is affecting our ability to do the business of the people. I kind of doubt that. Maybe it affects their ability to do it without public comment from the audience. The Stop LAPD Spying Coalition, whose members are frequent critics of city policies, argue the new rules could be used to squash free speech. You don't even have the gumption to acknowledge that there's dignity in rage, there's dignity in protest, said Hamid Khan, coordinator of the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition, to the council before the vote. This actually is an issue that I raise at Santa Cruz City Council regularly. When they tell, for instance, audience members not to clap or boo, when they tell you to face the city council rather than the audience, when they tell you that you can't applaud after, or you shouldn't applaud after someone speaks, or when they tell you can't, you know, I raise my hand to make a yak-yak sign with my fingers on occasion to indicate that the staff members or the council are ignoring the issue. This has been used at different times to attempt this kind of intimidation of the audience. Is used as a claiming a disruption in the audience when a disruption, as the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals pointed out in my case with mock Nazi salute issue from many years ago, means a real disruption. It doesn't mean something the city council feels offended by or disrupted by him or herself because they don't like the way it looks or the opinion that it represents. It's obviously a free speech issue. And so this is a serious attack on free speech rights in Los Angeles. Here's another story from the LA Times, a somewhat longer one. I'm going to read it too. On the same subject, LA activists and civil libertarians protest proposed crackdown on City Hall disruptions. This is by Emily Alpert Reyes and David Zaniser from September 18th, earlier before the actual law got passed. Civil libertarian attorneys and community activists are fighting a proposed crackdown on people who disrupt public meetings at LA City Hall, arguing that the measure would violate their rights to free speech. And under the proposed rules, shouting from the audience and other unruly behavior could get people banned from attending city council and committee meetings for several days at a time, as was mentioned before. The push to tighten city rules follows years of complaints about racial epithets, profane and misogynist language. That's the latest. The attempt to crack down on people because of abusive language that's used, but this is a public forum. We're not talking about a tea party here. People express themselves in the vernacular they have, and if they're racist, they express themselves in racist terminology. Sorry, I'm not a conscious racist myself, though of course I'm a racist because I've been born in a racist culture, and I have that kind of mentality in my conditioning. I wish I weren't. I hope I won't be. but let's be realistic about what we really are and not attempt to prettify what's going on here or to shut people down who speak their minds in whatever vernacular they know. Some neighborhood advocates say the behavior has made them hesitant to testify in person at City Hall. Well, that's the same excuse used against homeless people speaking at the mic angrily about the city council here in Santa Cruz. The council postponed a discussion of the proposal Tuesday. That was about 2 weeks ago, and of course they eventually passed this can't come back to city council if you're talking nasty. And to give council members the option of hearing from their lawyers behind closed doors, said Rob Wilcox, a spokesman for the city attorney Mike Foor. Dozens of people who showed up to oppose the plan vowed to return next week when the item is scheduled to be taken up. Council rules already allow audience members to be removed for behavior that disrupts orderly conduct of public meetings, such as clapping, whistling, repeatedly waving their arms, stomping feet, or uttering loud, threatening, or abusive language. And my contention has always been, unless you are stopping a city council member's or a member of the audience who's trying to testify, unless you're stopping that business from proceeding, you have the right to speak out, and you should, in fact, exercise it. It's a good idea that you do. You may not like it when some people exercise it in ways that you don't agree with, but you're attacking your own right to do so when you attack those people, and you attack the right of that person to speak out, even if you don't like it. I don't like some of the things some... Certainly, I mean, I'd like to shut down some of these city council members. There's a much, I think, better case to be made for council members being restricted in their time and staff members being restricted in their time than members from the audience being restricted. And here's a little more from the story. City staffers say there's been an increase in disruptions, often by the same small group of people. Earlier this month, frequent meeting attendee Armando Herman used profanity, a racial slur for African Americans, and a vulgar word for the female anatomy while addressing the council. Notice you don't hear the context in which it was used. So if I say we're all being treated like niggers here, and says, or to treat women just like cunts is ridiculous. But you see, the use of those words in the context, if you don't tell the context, then suddenly it's the word itself that becomes the taboo, and then you can use that to get rid of the person speaking the word, no matter what they're saying. To continue, after Herman finished speaking, Council President Herb Wesson addressed Jocelyn Duarte, who had been sitting in the front row and covering her the ears of her 10-year-old daughter while Herman spoke. Wesson told Duarte he would welcome a note indicating how offended she was by the comments. At that point, Herman began yelling from the audience, and Wesson ordered him removed from the building for disrupting the meeting. Minutes later, Herman started shouting outside the city council loud enough to be heard by council members. Afterward, council members expressed frustration with such behavior, arguing that it was meant to offend and intimidate members of the public, especially children. We don't know, because this story does not report what the nature of those specific comments was. And I would also say it's illegal to actually disrupt a council meeting. So if his loud shouting was loud enough to actually stop the business from proceeding, that would be a crime under current law. You wouldn't need additional law to remove the person from council or punish them from speaking. You could do so immediately. You could have the person arrested and then see if a jury would convict them. Because I have been arrested on a number of occasions for violating the rules of Santa Cruz City Council, whether it's putting my tape recorder in a place they don't want it placed, even though it's been placed there for decades, or raising my arm in a mock Nazi salute, or turning... I was never arrested for turning my back on the council and speaking to the audience, but I was threatened with... implicitly threatened with that kind of arrest by some of the previous mayors, not by the current mayor, Terrazas, a little more savvy about these matters. So it's good not to, if you can, cater to this kind of bullying. And because it not only does it hurt you, but it hurts everyone who's watching you because they may lose heart as well. And that's a real problem, I think. Not that you're going to get anywhere, even if you have heart at this city council meeting in our city or maybe in Los Angeles, but you should be able to, and that perhaps may be part of the bottom line there. Duarte would come to City Hall for a ceremony honoring the Salvadoran American Civic Group for which she worked, said later she felt threatened by Herman's behavior. Such hateful speech, she wrote in a letter to Councilman Mitch O'Farrell, creates a hostile environment which is not conducive for others to exercise their right to freedom of speech. Now, I wonder, you know, who that was being criticized by this guy who was shouting. Herman called his language protected speech and disputed the idea that his behavior in any way threatens public safety. He said council members are changing the rules in an attempt to silence critical opinions. I've been to hundreds, if not a thousand, meetings. Now all of a sudden they don't like to be criticized, Herman said. Federal courts have found that public speakers cannot be removed simply for uttering profane or offensive words. 5 years ago, a federal judge found the LA had violated the U.S. and California constitutions when it ejected two public speakers from meetings. Under California law, it has to be an actual substantive disruption to the meeting, said Brennan Hamm, staff attorney with the ACLU of Southern California. Hamm said his group is concerned that the existing definition of disruption under city rules is overly broad. For instance, if someone is clapping briefly, it's difficult to see how this would cause an actual disruption, he said. Attorney Wayne Spindler, who has repeatedly been kicked out of city meetings, argued the city would not be able to successfully defend the new rules in court. They're disenfranchising people every day, said Spindler, who has sued the city over free speech and other issues. At council meetings right now, you get a minute, and half the time they interrupt you during that minute. Yes, L.A. is even worse than Santa Cruz. 2 years ago, the city shortened the time that each person could comment on certain council meetings, council agenda items from 2 minutes to 1 minute. The council also routinely turns down requests to speak about an issue if it has already been discussed in one of its committees, a practice that has frustrated some residents. During a two-minute public comment period at a council committee meeting on Monday, Spindler repeated a vulgar word for the female genitalia 11 times while denouncing the proposed crackdown on audience disruptions. Spindler, whose law practice is based in the San Fernando Valley, also used a racist word for African Americans to describe council members and repeatedly referenced their Jewish heritage. Spindler was removed from the committee meeting at the end of the testimony. Councilmember Paul Krikorian said he ordered him out because Spindler continued to speak after his allotted time had ended, creating a distraction. And that's the only base on which I've really agreed that it is, I don't know if it's appropriate, but it is actually a disruption if you talk about something else during a council meeting other than what's on the agenda. Of course, the problem with that, while it is, I think, a somewhat more a clearer and less broad definition of disruption, it really means that you can only talk about the limited items that the mayor chooses to put on the agenda, even if the public wants something else put there. So that can be a problem. Let's take another musical break, shall we?
There's this great Popeye cartoon where he gets inside a Bluto's shirt and he's popping out of his sleeves going, "Here I am, yoo-hoo." And Bluto is confused. He's going,
"Hey, where'd you, why you,
And he's trying to beat up Popeye and he ends up pummeling himself. And that is the war on terror. That is the war on terror. It's the war on terror. There's this old joke where a guy is walking home late at night. He sees another guy under a streetlight, searching frantically in the gutter. He says, "Hey man, what did you lose?" Guy says, "I dropped my keys about six blocks away." "Why aren't you looking over there?" Guy says, "The light's better over here." And that is the war on terror. That is the war on terror. Yeah, that's the war on terror. Is the war on terror. We got a vacuum cleaner on sale. Oh, I'm so sorry, but we're out of that model. But I can probably get you out the door for 200 billion more or less, probably more, with a model we call preemptive war that leaves your floor dirtier than before.
There's that great quote about war, and I'm trying to remember who said it. But the people can always be brought to do the bidding of the leaders. You just tell them they're under attack and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism. Now who said that? Oh yeah, it was Hermann Göring.
And that is the War on Terror, Roy Zimmerman from Faulty Intelligence. You're still tuned to Free Radio. Keep up the good work and get in touch with me if you would like to get a reward, $300 to $500. If you find us a place for a year or a fraction thereof, you'll get a fraction of the reward for where we can put up our 10x10 studio. That can be a small room, even a closet conceivably, although we really need something slightly bigger, 10x10 feet. It can be indoors or outdoors. It has to have access to electricity, access to internet, access to a bathroom, access hopefully to a public transportation line people can get to. We want poor people to be able to use our studio as well. So do that if you can. Again, the number is 423-4833. Also, if you're interested in reports, if you see anything happening, please whip out your cell phone, your camera, call somebody over. In terms of seeing any kind of police harassing poor homeless people, rangers harassing them, vigilantes, merchants trying to own the sidewalks, any of that stuff, it's really important that you put it up on YouTube, let people see what's really going on rather than simply the sanitized official police seal of approval stuff that you get in the Sent Anal, or the Sentinel, as they call the local newspaper. So I'm on the line with the activist storage maestro, the only person providing free storage in town. That's Brent Adams. Hi, Brent.
Hi. Caveat to that, we heard that Nane of Boris Unidos under the radar has something like that. I can't say that officially, obviously. And then, believe it or not, we heard that Cabrillo is offering some of their, to their students, some of the bike lockers as storage. That's really cool to hear.
Well, they're copying you, Brent. Now, what's going on here?
No, they're not copying us. But, you know, all of a sudden, we've been, since we have the storage program, people are going, by the way, we've been doing it too. You know, like it kind of like a lot of people opened up, that, you know, that they've been trying to help. In that regard, people interacting with Barrios Unidos specifically, not people generally off the street. And then at Cabrillo, definitely not people experiencing homelessness in the region around Cabrillo, just students. So that's the caveat there.
Mm-hmm. And your numbers are continuing to grow. How many have you currently got in the program?
We've got two, three, or four types of numbers. The first, we have over 170 who have used the program in the last 4.5 months. We have over 100 bins in active use right now, but that really dwindles down when you talk about the daily user, that we're talking somewhere between 30 and 40, and then the weekly user, probably about 60 people. Mm-hmm. So we're feeling, and we haven't even really put the word out, we haven't done any, since we have the new facility at 150 Felker Street, Suite H, we have not done any outreach yet. This part of town, meaning the Harvey West Homeless Services Center, St. Francis Nexus.
Now, there's been some chatter at the River Street campground, the barbed wire boneyard place, that one of the reasons that they have to have such restrictive laws is because of the outcry from neighbors. Have you experienced any of that?
You know, I still haven't seen that article, but that's ludicrous when we talk about the River Street camp, because it's a lockdown facility camp. So there should be no way for the neighborhood here to permeate. But yeah, of course, in the Cross Street area, if you were a neighbor, you'd have some concerns. Additionally, neighbors here have some right to be concerned that we're importing a new program that's going to bring people onto the property, into their neighborhood. we've seen a little bit of that, but really it's just mitigating the actual effects of the people coming in, you know, and there's a lot that can be said about that, how we're approaching that, meaning we have a 3 times daily cleanup of the space. People can't be in the neighborhood when they're not accessing storage. But people who sleep outside are congregating in various areas, and that's just going to happen. So I don't know what to say about that larger issue. It's just something, you know, poverty exists, and we're going to see it. And if we don't see it, we should ask ourselves why.
Well, I know one of my criticisms of the Homeless Lack of Services program was they're creating a low-impact zone around the entire block area, which this was done, you know, years ago. It isn't new. It's old. But it was just as onerous and abusive, as far as I'm concerned, to suggest you can eliminate the rights of people in public spaces because you want to pander to me, to the prejudices and fears. And to some extent, you pointed out, too, maybe some legitimate concerns. But I think they're covered by existing laws of the businesses and residences nearby. Now, are you telling me that the storage program is now doing this something similar?
Well, I mean, right out of the gate, we had to do that with the landowner, the property owner, through the management program, asked us to come up with a mitigation plan before we even had the space. You know, what's our plan to dealing with homelessness on the property and then by extension in the neighborhood? So I had to come up with a detailed plan. And we've been working that plan. And part of that is outreach to the tenants of the facility, the office complex, and even outreach to the nextdoor.com group, to Ocean's 11, and others. So we had went to one of their weekend cookouts and made a presentation about the storage program, saying, "Hey, we're in your neighborhood, and we expect it to benefit, but at first, it's going to seem a little complicated."
Well, you know, outreach is good in one thing, but another thing is telling homeless people you can't be in a three-block area or we won't take your storage. Are you telling them that?
No, we say the only way we're able to have storage in this area is if we create an agreement with the landlord to not blow the area up. You can't camp on the property or within 100 yards, and you can't congregate on the property or within 100 yards. It's extreme, and it's not ideal, but that's the only way that we were going to get the lease. That's the only way previously that the city allowed us to use that parking lot.
Is that advisory or mandatory? Is that advisory or mandatory?
This is a client agreement that they sign upon signing their dwellings with us at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Now, we've never... we apply our agreements, as we call them, with very judiciously and with a lot of compassion and empathy. But what's true is I can't have people beginning. Well, here's what would happen if we didn't have that rule. People would camp in and around the property at a much more higher rate so they can be closer to their stuff. So that's easy to understand. So how to mitigate that, how to split the difference between saying you can't be anywhere in the region or you can't be on the property camping or in and around. So what we do is try to split the difference. The aim is that the storage program has a positive effect on the neighborhood. The only way that could occur is if they're seeing a decrease in some of the negative behaviors they would cite as syringes, poop, garbage, and then people camping along the street. That last piece is the most difficult for a guy like for people like us, because we know there are no places where the people can be are decreasing, not increasing. So why would I now be an agent that makes it more difficult for people to exist?
Have you actually exercised this rule to evict any people because they have violated this rule?
No. What we do is a simple warning. We say your agreement with us, like people will come and hang out on the property, and we'll. Because this is historically a property where people hang out late at night and use various substances and congregate. And we'll have a big problem with that in the rain. But, yeah, we'll find people and we'll say, actually, you can't be in the garbage enclosure. Currently, you're within our program, so you're challenging your agreement with us. So I ask you to not be on the property when the program's not open. So that's just a simple, respectful, verbal warning with no challenge. You know, we're not saying we're going to call the cops or anything like that. Or somebody, I'll see somebody is camped, you know, in eyeshot of the office, and then they wake up and they come to the program and I have to remind them. Or at the previous parking lot, people were camping nearby, waking up, accessing their storage, and then going back to their sleeping area. Well, we had to go over there and say, you're challenging your agreement with us. We're trying to not blow the scene up, is how we put it. You know, let's not blow the scene up so we can actually continue to do this most awesome thing. And so a person simply makes a decision for themselves. Is it valuable enough to store their belongings and camp elsewhere, or to not store their belongings and camp right on the scene, where we now at that point have no responsibility to them?
What decisions have they made?
I mean, perfect rules.
What decisions have they made? In other words, have there been a decision? Okay. You know, fuck you, Mister.
Everyone is making a decision to congregate and camp someplace else.
Huh. So you found your gentle persuasion approaches has worked. Have there been people who aren't a part of the storage program who come and camp nearby and say, well, fuck you, or I'm sorry, I've got no place, this is as good a place as any?
What we do is we approach them and say, hey, you're camping in the storage program. This is really going to benefit you if you were to use this service. And then they'll say, no, thank you. And we'll say, okay, please help us by, you know, keeping the space clean when you leave. When they do leave, we'll clean the space up. We have no responsibility or other word with them other than, would you like some water? We're not a charitable Christian organization. We're a humanitarian focus.
Do they return
even those people?
After they've left on the occasions when they have, do they tend to return, or do they generally steer clear thereafter?
No, they normally finally come under the responsibility of a law enforcement officer in that parking lot 17 south of Laurel Broadway would come through at least once a week or every day. So we would tell them, you know, hey, the police car is around the corner. They're starting to wake people up. So we'll even give them a heads up, like, you know, if you don't want a citation. But no, people, that parking lot was amazing. We showed that we could work with all parties, the wheelworks, the city, people needing to store their belongings, people who chose not to store their belongings. We didn't have one ruffled feather.
And this was the previous area you were at near the Broadway Bridge, right?
Correct. And here, right now, we have nobody camping. There's some people camping on the backside of the fence, which is Caltrans. They you know, they slip the fence, they come through the city, or the Caltrans will come through and sew the fence back in, you know, with another piece of metal screen. Well, all we do is we go through and we encounter them and we say, hey, we have a storage program nearby, you're welcome to benefit from it. If not, we have garbage bags, we have a syringe receptacle, we have a sharps container, we have drinking water. If you're pooping in the area, please don't do it on the ground surface. And we can help you with that, you know, find a way to do that better.
By the way, any reports... Go ahead.
The biggest problem with feces and urine in this particular spot is there's just no place to go. I mean, all the way out to Grant Street, Denny's if you're lucky, then Homeless Services Center, St. Francis Food Kitchen, but really right at this Ross footbridge at the levee, there is no spot. In fact, our clients come onto the site with, you know, like, I really need to use the bathroom. And we don't have an agreement with the landlord that our clients can use the bathroom because, of course, the chiropractor and the food company that we're sharing the facility with had their clients use the bathroom. So it's a little bit of a misfit. I have really great news that the city, Susie O'Hara, I might have told you this before, came up with the idea that we put a locking gate at the west end along the levee side of this property so the people don't have to come on to the property exactly. They'll pour some concrete. And then in our highest ideal, there could be a locked cage there with a bathroom that we monitor that opens up, that we unlock it when it's time to open up, lock it when the program's not. Of course, we would like to see full utilitarian bathrooms for all 24 hours a day. That's our bottom line. But you know, to get these programs, we would like to actually manage our own bathroom with the facility.
We're talking about a bathroom or a porta potty?
Porta potty to start.
I gotcha. You've mentioned in the past, although you're not doing the same kind of more regular research in terms of documentary coverage of homeless outside in Santa Cruz on the Facebook page that's still there and often promotes some interesting dialogue and has some interesting videos, revealing videos. I notice an increased number of sort of orange structures where people's camps used to be near the Homeless Lack of Services Center on Coral Street. Any comments on that?
Yeah, you're talking about that new exclusionary zone. You might have noticed the yellow fence along the front. They've removed the ability for people to erect tents or even sit right in front. You know that landscape path I'm talking about along the front of Reveille?
Right next to Highway 9.
Yeah.
I think I know.
Right there and along Coral Street. They've completely fenced it off. I'm told by a source at Homeless Service Center that they're going to actually put the regular black steel fencing there, too. They don't have much of a responsibility to the rest of Coral Street that they can manage it, but that's the plan, yeah. I don't know what you're talking about specifically. There, you know, tents rise and fall. They move people around. At that area, you've got Caltrans, county, railroad tracks, city, you know, and so people just bop back and forth on a regular basis. Us as advocates, we want to encourage people to be a little more free and easy so that they don't gather so many belongings in one space that it becomes an extreme psychological and physical hardship every time it's time to move, because we know by looking at the long cycle, they do have to move from one place to another. So, you know, get a tent that's easy to break down, don't have an enormous amount of belongings, and just keep it free and easy. I'm being redundant.
No, you're being quite pertinent. What about near the tracks? I noticed yesterday or the day before more people clustering up there and much less on along the road. I guess it's, is it Lime Kiln? I'm not sure. The street that's
perfect. Yeah, Lime Kiln, that Coral.
Yeah. And I guess apropos of this, we had a Conscience in Action meeting yesterday, and apparently some of the Conscience in Action members are palling it up with Chief Mills. And Mills is claiming that there's been they've stopped issuing camping citations, which I'm trying to get verification on through essentially street reports, because, you know,
in fact, they had the blitz last week. We call it the blitzkrieg, where they were all over waking people up en masse. There we're still seeing citations of people being in closed areas, obstructing the sidewalk.
Did they use camping at all?
After dark. What's that?
Did they use camping as 6.36 at all, as far as you know?
No, they're not using that anymore. In fact, the officers themselves have this new rhetoric where they act like they're doing this good thing of not enforcing that anymore as they go ahead and enforce everything else. So I don't see the boon. Of course, it's clear that they're not enforcing camping. So it's really up to the savvy, the intrepid person who sleeps outside to find that spot where they can remain for a week or more. And they're out there. There's just these little eddying spots where there's no complaints. Most of the stuff is complaint-driven. And then you'd be in the right jurisdiction, not obstructing, not being in a park. You know, all of these things. And there are spaces. I just visited Oakland last night, and you'll see just large encampments that are really clean and highly well-managed that are still renegade camps, like the kind we would like to see but haven't seen yet in Santa Cruz, that are in spaces that don't seem to challenge property owners, businesses, or other ordinances. So I'm hoping, you know, I normally would be engaged in that endeavor, Robert, if I wasn't doing this more wannabe sort of professional orientation, trying to build and manage programs and have a nonprofit. I would probably be out there staking these areas out, creating maps, creating plans for people to follow, and then working with Mills in that regard. That's where I wish this group you're talking about would be working in a more effective manner, really about the experience of homelessness, not our middle-class values around, oh, my God, there's no place to poop. There's plenty of places to poop. I'm kind of chilling now.
No, I mean, your point is well taken. You your bursts of enthusiasm are indeed met, are also accompanied by substance, Brent. So don't forget that. Let me ask you about.
I never will forget that.
Well, good. Don't. you know, in Oakland, you've been. Have you found that these camps, and this may challenge your own model of a sanctuary village, did they include people who were drug users and maybe discreet drug users? How did they get along internally in these camps, or did you have much time to talk to folks?
Yeah. Well, the way that works is you have one of two ways to go. One is this is a clean space, and then you erect your encampment according to a set of values that everyone erecting the camp in this space agrees to. It's a code of agreement. So, and that often is a managed by an activist, an anarchist, a church member, a nonprofit, something like that. That's one way, and the rules would be no using in this space. The other one, which is we tend to favor as, you know, the sanctuary camp is like that. You can't use in this space because you need buy-in from all parties, the city, the neighborhoods, the business district, and they would have a
veto.
Have a hard line on that. But a more humanitarian view would be people are using how we all expect privacy, the privacy of our domicile. So you have to then, they call them wet camps. I don't like to call it. Just it's a space where when you're in your domicile, you get to do what you want to do in private. No one would ever, it's unassailable. Fourth Amendment. We protect that. But outside of the domicile, you can't be using or seem to be using or even have illegal substances outside your domicile. But the next layer of agreements come into play really quickly. No repeated disruptions, no abusive language or no violence or no theft. And those are the ones where people who are using wildly and not caring for the environment or their community will start running up against. For instance, if somebody drinking out of a handle of vodka, you know, by that evening, they start, you know, we see some loud noise, belligerent.
Mm-hmm.
Some other behaviors like that. And some of that stuff has been the source initially of their homelessness to begin with. So a person who is has a hard time being in community at all, it's really hard to have them be in community with you under a set of agreements. But that's what we're trying to encourage here. How do you encourage somebody that's wildly to their benefit to fit into a mold now? You can, but then I believe that's what's happening up at the encampment. I think people are using within their tent. The management knows that there's some use. People are under the influence, but as long as they're acting right outside of their tent, they can stay.
You're talking about the River Street Campground.
Yeah, I don't think they're going through searching. I don't think they're searching people's bags.
Right. That's what I hear. Let me ask you, what about up in Oakland?
We're going to say anything about that camp. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the more privacy you can have, the more chance people have of being themselves and being able to survive in... but what about Oakland? Did you have much time to see how things were working out with folks up there?
Well, I surveyed about three or four camps in a really fly-by-night way. Some of them, of course, were renegade to the point where, you know, they're unstructured completely and nobody's going to tell them what the fuck to do. And they're wildly messy and they challenge every, you know, middle-class value.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, there's fun in that. A lot of us, you know, political ideals would say, well, good, fuck them. But on the other hand, there were other camps that had, you know, they had some makeshift fencing and it looked like they're trying to have some... order, meaning keeping some people out, and the people who were in looked like they had some protection. But they were still what I call hodgepodge. And then there were other tent communities up there that were strikingly different. They were all bright, brand-new tents, well-lit space. You could see a porta-potty nearby. There wasn't garbage anywhere. And they were, you know, a nice use of that orange fence to just create a basic visual tacit boundary, and it had a night and day effect. So I think they're not exactly the same types of people who are using one or another tent camp. I think you fall, you know, birds of a feather sort of thing, but you want to create what I like is the ability that a person can migrate from one to the other by, you know, first you're in a tent, you know, down by the cuts and you're using. But if you want to have ability to have a cleaner, safer space,
a little more, you know, to talk about, you know, some of these catchphrases like human dignity, self-respect, things like that. These are real things, human values that we find, like with the work that we do. When people come into the storage program, you can see a shift in behavior.
Mm-hmm. So did you form any contacts with people in these camps?
No. I only said hi to somebody in one of the more hodgepodge camps, and I was not welcome to be there. They were suspicious of my presence. I was actually delivering somebody to I was picking up something from Craigslist, and I decided to take a tour for a couple hours. So I didn't really interact with anybody. I have to go back up there now and try to document some of that stuff. Also, you're right with this Homeless Outside Santa Cruz Facebook page, because a lot happens week to week. You know, right now there are tents back in some areas where they had been cleaned out a couple weeks ago. There's a high focus with law enforcement in the Paradise Park area, and I know that only because I have a window onto that space, the access to that space.
What about San Lorenzo Park? Anything happening there?
Yeah, we've got, I have to be really careful because...
if you wish to say it.
Yeah, I think, there are people responsibly using that space, and that's really good to hear. There are people also who are, I think law enforcement, as well as the people who are, using that space after hours, I think they're finding some way to coexist. I think that's still a place where people with no other space to go, and they're acting more or less okay, you know? You can't have a trash camp in the center of San Lorenzo Park. You also can't erect a tent for, 24 hours, but you can be there in a relatively tidy manner, and when law enforcement comes through, not have a cigarette or open alcohol or excrement and all the other stuff, and act right, and, pretend like you're moving along, and then they'll let you be.
Any reports on the bathrooms still being accessible there?
Bathrooms are open right now in San Rosa Park. Bathrooms are open in Depot Park. I'll just keep saying that over and over. It's a short walk from Loudon Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
People actually have... So I was there yesterday asking people, if the bathrooms are closed here, there are no services, why do you choose this park as opposed to one just a short walk down the tracks at Depot Park where the bathrooms are open? They're clean, they're large, utilitarian, there's drinking water, bike racks, picnic tables. There are no picnic tables at Loudon Nelson Park. So it's Depot Park is a way better. I would be hanging there, and there are people hanging over there. You know what they said, why they hang out at Loudon Nelson?
Tell me.
7-Eleven.
Mm-hmm. Nearby.
And then I was like, wait. 7-Eleven is just a short walk from Depot Park. Just walk up the tracks and you're there.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I don't get it. I honestly don't get it. You're not going to challenge any residential concerns at Depot Park, but of course you're totally up everybody's ass at Loudon Nelson Park. So I don't get it. That's why I wish the activists were a little more proactive in looking at the map. How do you move pieces around the board? How do we make things better for people rather than just saying, we lost something. How do we get it back? Well, no, how do we find a better way that serves more people? If we open the bathrooms at Loudon Nelson, those concerns are not going to be alleviated. I mean, the management, the people who are experiencing some of those nefarious, let's call them, behaviors in the bathroom at Loudon Nelson, how are we going to mitigate those issues? We haven't talked about that. I'm really curious. If somebody's using in the bathroom, or somebody's acting up or being really messy, and then somebody wants to bring their child into that bathroom, what do you say to that, Robert? What's the plan?
Well, I'm interested in knowing how many times that's actually happened and when it happens. That's where we examine the emails. And maybe it wasn't all reflected in the emails, but it at least in terms of vandalism, and that you're not talking about vandalism here, I realize that, it was rare. I mean, a couple times a year. You're talking about, using needles.
It's mainly an energetic feeling that my child would be in there using the potty when somebody's in there
shooting up
and, mm-hmm. Cleaning out their toenails. We understand the need for both. The question is, how do you make that parent feel good and safe? So that's really what we're talking about. And maybe the activism doesn't see that as a concern.
I think that's legitimate.
I say I'm moderate now because when you're moderate, you have to look on both sides and try to create some sort of that you're making all sides a little happier. How do we serve these people? But why do people find the need to demand being in a conference, a community center, when they can have an open utilitarian space where they don't have to walk through a community center? They don't have to walk through a cafe. I just don't get it.
Well, yeah, but you also have to look at it this way. If people are being excluded suddenly from the center when they weren't excluded before, what does this really say about the changing temper of the town? I mean, is it really that there is such a huge increase in incidents? This I have not seen. Or is there rather more of a crackdown mentality by those wonderful moderates that you like to pack with? And not pack with, that's not fair. But, you know, that you are trying to accommodate or at least understand the concerns about. You know,
I think you catch my point.
You know.
Okay. Well, I mean, I hear that. I don't think that's very good systems thinking. I think I would actually highlight that's the problem that I have with the activism. It's less about the needs of people and how to make their experience better. It's more about using this as a political football to talk about a societal shift. Well, rather than try to make things better for people experiencing homelessness, we're using them as to rally and attack the city government about this shift without acknowledging that there's so many better ways and other ways to do it. When you're a sailor in a sailboat on the high sea, the wind shifts and you make adjustments. You just don't sit there and go, God damn, the wind shifted. God damn it. And just stay there in the doldrums. No, you do what you can with the tools you have, and you always try to get down the coast. And that's what we're doing with these programs. How do we achieve stuff, Robert?
Yeah, no, yo-ho matey. I understand your metaphor. But, you know, I got to tell you, and I know you're going to hate this metaphor, that there were people in Germany in the 30s who said the same thing with Jews. They said, look, we're working with the community leaders and Jews. All we have to do is assure people that, you know, let's moderate the conflicts that are happening. Yes, it's true they're being excluded in some respects, more so than the past. But look over there. They're not really being excluded. If they go into those nice little ghettos in Warsaw, they can still be, and of course it's not a nice little ghetto, but they had areas in Germany in the 30s that were not concentration camps quite, but there were discriminatory areas that were created. Now you have to ask yourself if that kind of thing is happening here. Now maybe it's not. Maybe it is all just a matter of let's get moderate with the moderate neighbors.
Let's do better for the people we care about rather than using Nazi metaphors.
Well, ask yourself if it's true. If it isn't true, then the Nazi metaphor is inappropriate.
It's wildly inappropriate, especially in this situation, because again, we shoot to the Nazi metaphor instead of meeting the challenge of how do we do better for our people. I asked you the question and you sidestepped it. Wouldn't a utilitarian space where you can be in the space and have access more freely with tables and benches and a lawn space still accessible to San Lorenzo Park? I'm sorry, Loudon Nelson.
No. I wasn't really trying to sidestep your question, Brent.
Default Park should not be analogized as a type of ghetto, and that's what you did with your analogy.
It's not that the parks are a kind of ghetto. It is that the excluding people from one area and saying, but you can go over here into the black section if you'd like. We just don't want you in the white section is more sort of the metaphor. In other words, I don't disagree with you that your attempt to find reasonable answers and to encourage people to build more facilities where there's less hostility to that. But I see the city as gentrifying, and I think you do too, in ways that will eventually exclude those areas as well. See, that's the problem that I see here. And I understand. I mean, I think your concerns are legitimate and your arguments are not irrelevant at all, but I would say that mine have some bearing as well.
No, what I'm encouraging is that we realize gentrification is a coming wave on the ocean, and we understand that everyone's a human being, and rather than
saying that those impulses of those mothers and neighbors looking onto San Lorenzo Park and people accessing the center, that their concerns should be met authentically, they should feel heard, and that the way we step forward together as a community, where we see ourselves in community with them, not aside or in contrast or against them, as this same group of activists I've seen for years since prior and after the Occupy movement. What are we going to protest next is the question. No, this is our community. These people who are gentrifiers, our neighbors, sometimes they are seen as us. How do we do better for ourselves? The people we're concerned with helping, people who sleep outside who need toilets, are us, as well as the person who just bought that. You know, Robert Singleton has an apartment looking onto San Lorenzo, onto Loudoun Nelson Park. I don't know if you know that, at the playground end.
I wouldn't be surprised.
How do you keep Singleton and somebody who has to go to the bathroom meet both of their needs? Or, you know, all I'm trying to say is,
I understand. I understand what you're saying.
This is the way it works with all mediation.
We're gonna
make everybody happy in this regard.
Mediators deal with people who have equal power. When you have people who do not have equal power, you do not have mediation. You have something else. See, that's the problem. And the problem here is, if you look at the laws that have been increasingly created in Santa Cruz and other communities, you do not have this process of looking after everyone's interests. You have the illusion of doing that without the substance. These navigation centers, for example, are the illusion.
The Coalition on Homelessness is a future space where we talk about how do we improve, not maintain, bathrooms. How do we improve the entire system of people experiencing homelessness, to make sure one after the other, utilitarian access to showers, laundry facilities, storage programs, shelter, in many different ways that the activists, so all I'm trying to say is, I lost my thread here. The idea that you end up creating this, you don't get any forward motion and improve things. It's just that's why I've been against I moved myself away from this protest activism because it's just the same old thing. You show up at city council, you didn't answer my email, and we have blah, 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 blah. You get some good things out there. You get the people talking about, people need restrooms. We've been talking about it for years. But how do you actually finally, there's millions of dollars about to pour into the city.
Yeah,
get ahead of that and create a program that has something like Santa Monica's Swash Walk, where they have showers, laundry, lockers, all facilitated, all clean, a space where, travelers from Europe and students and people, working downtown and homeless people all together use it in kind of like a YMC fashion. We're not going to get that with this sort of protest device. We're going to get it with people who have vision, forward-thinking people who can take responsibility and the worst metaphor of all, carry that ball up the field and gain some fucking yardage here instead of always trying to maintain that 1 yard line like we do.
Okay, well, let's this 5-minute conversation has become somewhat extended. I'm going to let you have the last word on this one. You've talked me down there. I continue to think, that there are considerations on both sides here that are most important, and I understand. Let's pick it up later. I'll talk to you about Santa Monica, what the activists down there say, how wonderful it is, all those great facilities they've got. I've got to check into most recently what's going on down there. But
yeah.
I think you may be missing a few of the more essential elements that are actually also happening simultaneously, or maybe not. Have you been down to Santa Monica lately? I don't know.
No, but now all you can do
I haven't either,
is so. In your own backyard for the day and night storage program and see how that's doing.
I like that day and night storage program, and I commend you for your good work and encourage you to keep up the good work.
We are warmingcenterprogram.com to reach us, warmingcenter@gmail. Our hotline will be, we'll redouble our responsibility. Right now the phone is not taking a charge, but it's 831-234-9848, 234-9848. Facebook page Warming Center and Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz, Downtown Bathroom Task Force, all of that. Thanks, Robert. I always appreciate it.
One last question, Brent, before you go. Have you heard anything about this? I've heard tell from an employee at the Boneyard Barbed Wire Campground area that they are firing or laying off all their employees. I don't know if this is true or not. I wanted to find out from you what the story is.
Okay, real quick side. I'm in meetings with the warming at the Warming Center. I know Randy Morrow is trying to have big tent meetings with HSC, AFC, Salvation Army, Warming Center program, and a few others in bringing in the city of Watsonville and Salvation Army down there. We also do so. So they're trying to talk about the shelter crisis. I have some things to say, but they're not concrete. For instance, we saw that the city council voted to extend the encampment to April 2019, and then they're going to add 20 more tents. We've since heard echo that they might actually be closing it in November and then opening up, you know, having the Salvation Army operate at the Veterans of Foreign Wars building at 7th Avenue across town, a winter shelter for 60 people or less, while adding 20 people in the Pauley Loft, and craziest of all, renting space at the Page Smith for 20 more beds. If you do the math, it's kind of confusing, but you're ending up with if you take the year traditional 100 bed space, if you close the camp and open up Veterans of Foreign Wars, that just retains 60. But what happens? But that's you're actually doubling 60, because that puts 60 more people on the street than if you add 20 and 20 at the Homeless Services Center. That's 40. So you end up with, I guess, only 40 beds. And so we're still in a shelter bed crisis. I hope I mixed your mind up.
No, you did fine. I catch your drift.
Conversations between Warming Center and Salvation Army independently. We're not ready to talk about what the fruit of that is, because we're working on something. And then also with the Association of Faith Communities, we had a meeting with them yesterday. And there's cash money coming, and then HEAP money coming. Finally, these are many millions of dollars coming in from the state and federal government. Where in those big meetings, I went to one a couple of days ago, emergency services for the cash funding that's, I think, $800,000, we saw really good assertions from all parties about emergency services, emergency shelter, storage, and bathroom facilities. Those were all highlighted. And I had a breakout. Make sure you get Warming Center on there specifically. So there's good things happening, but I think we're just ahead of the ball here. We're still in before mid-October, so quite soon I think there will be some announcements.
Mm-hmm. Well, remember, the money has been dumped on these services for years and has had no impact at all. In fact, it's, you know, you get more and more folks outside. So anyway, I will leave it at that, and thank you for, you know, your thoughts and your information, and hopefully you'll be, if you can do some more documenting of what's actually going on in Santa Cruz on the ground and putting it up on YouTube,
yeah.
I'll be keeping an eye out for it.
Well, I put something on Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz this morning about people getting repeated citations. Right now, I mean, we had three people independently come into the storage program this morning saying, "I have to go. I'm late for court." "What are you late for court?" "Oh, I got a ticket for sitting down next to the bathroom because I was tired after recycling." I'm like, "Fuck, that should have been a warning. You know, that person has to, you know." And then other people were sitting in the park after the dark. They are handicapped, and one person has dementia. They're literally going to court. And I'm like, there are multiple tickets. And I'm like, how does that help anybody? Where's the intention? Where's the core intention behind all that? Mainly that is just to shake people down, find out if they have any warrants, put them into the system, and it makes an incredible hardship on their lives when it adds no benefit. It just really beats them down. So there's a video about that.
Well put, and I will hope people will go listen to it or look at it, and both. And thank you, Brent, and people can give you a call at
234-9848 is the hotline.
One more time.
234-9848.
Okay.
Thank you,
man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that, of course, is Brent Adams. We're going to go out on a tune by another one of them, Roy Zimmerman, the Chanties. Thanks for being with me in this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I will be with you again on Sunday with a longer show. And I'm going to run off now. This is, it already have happened probably, but check out what's going on with a renter revolt and see just how revolting things can get down there. And I'll be reporting back on Sunday if I'm in the mood. Talk to you then.
Thank God we finally had us a war. It's what neocons have been hankering for. Rivers of gore, we can wave the flag o'er, flaunting our superpower status, wringing our hands saying, why do they hate us? And thank God we finally nabbed just Saddam, you horrible threat to our dear Uncle Sam, after you spent 9 months eating goat on the lam, while we liberated your country, slashing and burning and saving just one tree. The Ministry of Oil. Saddam shame, Saddam shame. We all had to learn your damn name. Only three questions remain. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. Iraq is the front in the war against terror. Might be because we invited them there. Perhaps there's some terrible clerical error. Maybe a faulty equation, like 9-1-1 equals U.S. invasion. We are not nation builders, we know that for certain. We're building the sovereign state of Halliburton, ignoring the guy there behind the big curtain. Driving around feeling groovy, a star-spangled banner on every SUV. Saddam shame, Saddam shame. We all had to learn your damn name. Only three questions remain. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. We put you on trial for a jury of your peers. 12 bloody dictators with no careers to decide how you'll spend your retirement years and your legacy now that you've fallen. Hitler but littler, or Stalin but a smallin. It's an interesting story how we came to hate you. If you'd never existed, we'd have to create you and send Donald Rumsfeld to interrogate you and fillate you. You were ruthless and cruel and you knew it. You oppressed that whole nation. Now how did you do it? Saddam shame. That's my Donald Rumsfeld impersonation. I'm an abstract impressionist. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. We shocked them and awed them and went to the showers. Mission accomplished. Hey, where's all the flowers? The tyrant is vanquished and Baghdad is ours. I mean theirs. The incoming Iraqi government. As they say, the Iraqi government incoming. Still, you'd have to say somebody screwed you if your travel agent sent you to Fallujah. Saddam shame, Saddam shame. We all had to learn your damn name. Only three questions remain. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. Yes, only three questions remain. Hussein, Hussein, who knows?
And it looks like we have a little more time than I expected. So, hey, here's a jump back to discussion of Measure M. That's the Rent Control and Just Eviction Protection Ordinance coming up in November and being badly outspent by the out-of-town real estate profiteers who are sending their troops and their bucks into Santa Cruz. I attended a city council forum on this, I should say city council candidate forum, which Wes White, who you heard earlier on this channel or on this show, videoed, and you can find that on his video website, on his John Doe website. And that's near the top on the John Doe13K website. Two words, John. Second word, Doe13K. It's under the title Renters Issues Candidate Forum. I caught one of the Measure M activists before that actual candidate forum began, and I interviewed him. So here we go.
We have a modest Measure M supporter here. It's we're in room four. Is that where we are?
Yes, this is in room four.
Covered with delicacies for sale. And the occasional free cookie. Very nice. And the forum...
Debuting our new pamphlet.
So give me the high points of the pamphlet.
Well, essentially, we've tried to reformat the pamphlet by keeping the main points that we had on our previous material.
Are we charging for these crackers?
No, they're free.
They're free, okay.
To draw people to the table. To retain the main points of information that we had in our previous literature, while just being a little more digestible and presenting more of a human face to the rent control issue, we've included the stories of three tenants who have three Santa Cruz tenants who have recently who have been like victims of the housing crisis in terms of losing stable housing. Or in having getting increased financial difficulty on account of the cost of living here in Santa Cruz.
Are they able to still live here? I see three photos in this flyer you've got here.
They are. One person has permanent housing for now, but is not sure how long they'll be able to continue in it. The other two do not have permanent housing, but are staying with friends at the moment.
So the main issue, of course, at the opponents are always pushing on is affordable housing will be cut back because of rent control, because all those profiteering landlords will have to go to some other happy hunting ground and sell out and that sort of thing. And they claim stats from Berkeley and Santa Monica to prove this. What's your research led you to believe?
Well, I would say that I don't think that there is, you know, an affordable housing versus rent control issue. I think it's an affordable housing and rent control issue. And what we've seen from other cities that have adopted rent control, especially most recently in Mountain View, is a great example of it. It's a city with a somewhat similar economy to Santa Cruz's. What's happened is that there's not even been an appreciable decrease in new construction, because it still is so profitable to build housing because the rent is already so high that market rate developers do continue to build. We are definitely going to need to have more affordable housing and more housing built below market rate. Because that's what housing that actually serves the people in our community. The idea behind Measure M is just to provide immediate protection for people who are living in their homes currently, so that they'll be able to still remain in this community by the time until.
You don't dispute the argument that. Are you suggesting that a Mountain View of rent control has not reduced the stock of affordable housing?
Yes, that's my contention. That it has not and will not reduce the stock of
Santa Monica and Berkeley.
I think.
Have you researched though?
I have researched Berkeley. I've not done quite as much research into Santa Monica. But what I know from Berkeley is that they've done a comparison of this all across the East Bay, is that the number of rental units across the whole East Bay has declined to some extent. In Berkeley, that's largely because of state legislatures imposed loopholes in their local rent control.
Can you be more specific?
Well, Ellis Act conversions, for one thing, which are where essentially an apartment building of rent-controlled units can be converted into a building of condominiums and then sold off to owners. It's a sort of a state legislature-enacted way of getting around rent control in a city. In addition, the Costa-Hawkins Act has meant that in areas that switch tenants frequently, which is especially the case in college towns like Berkeley and Santa Cruz, it is
vacancy decontrol,
which basically resets the rent for each new tenant, makes it harder to preserve rent control long term. That's why we're also pushing for Proposition 10 to pass statewide, which would repeal the Costa-Hawkins Act and let us have more effective rent control over the long term.
Are there states where rent control has been widely or at least selectively used? And you can get a sense of how false, how true, or how partially true these arguments about the renter loss of rental housing as a consequence of rent control is.
In other words, I'm pushing this argument not because I believe it's true or because I believe it needs to be focused on, but because it is one that has been avoided by rent control advocates I've talked to. They will say, oh, like you have, well, there is an affordable housing crisis. There's also a rent control. Rent control deals with existing people, housing. We need more housing. And my question, though, is do we have any other stats from other states that you know about?
Well, I think many other states, actually, the state legislature has prohibited rent control entirely, has prohibited cities from adopting rent control. So that's not, that has not been a method available to cities in other states, which is why most of the comparisons have come from California. Other countries, I know European countries, some European countries do have rent control on a larger basis. I do not know have enough statistics on hand immediately to... you know, cite any particular cases, but I know that they have had a pretty long-running system. Some countries since the Second World War, I believe.
Any particular country?
I actually don't. I can't say anything for sure. Okay. I'm sorry about that.
We expect you to get to it next time we talk.
Yes, it's definitely a point that I'll look into more.
Any new information coming out today that you expect to hear at this forum?
I mean, I think. We already know where most of the candidates stand on Measure M. I think what's going to be more interesting to find out is what alternative plans they have to offer. Because, as we know, the only two candidates who support Measure M are Justin Cummings and Drew Glover. All the others are in opposition. And so it will be interesting just to, you know, to see what solutions they might have, whether the candidates tend to agree on their solutions or have, you know, differing ones. Whether they suggest, you know, building more affordable housing, building more market rate housing, or taking some other action to control the price on existing housing.
Now,
I think that'll be an interesting thing to see.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you present at the tumultuous council meeting where Nora Hockman was arrested?
I was. I was not present at the moment when she was arrested, though, but I was present at the meeting.
Just wondering what her fate is. Is she still going to court, or did they not file charges? Do we know what the story was?
I actually do not know the latest. I actually am not fully updated on that. I think...
I saw her here a minute.
Yeah, she is here herself.
And I didn't actually ask Nora what went down. It's a real kind of a prickly relationship with her, but, you know, she's an activist, a union activist, has been working hard on Measure M, I assume. I certainly have seen her at various forums. And she was arrested because she spoke out angrily, intentionally disrupting a meeting, and I don't have any problem with that in some circumstances. She had a lot of supporters in the audience. She was not actually arrested for disrupting the meeting. She was told to leave the chambers. They cleared the entire chambers, apparently not wanting to have a confrontation with her supporters, perhaps. I don't know. That's what the Mayor Terrazas did. This was some weeks ago during the discussion of whether Measure M should have a special city council look-see to see if what its impact would have on the city. Since it was being presented by a mayor who is anti-M, it was not viewed in a very favorable light. I think I may have mentioned this already, by the pro-rent control forces, pro-M forces. So she attempted to come back into the chamber, and as I understand it, she was arrested for doing that. And I don't know if she was held in jail until late that night. I think we'll hear a little bit from a person who helped her. Or maybe I had that conversation with someone else and I'm remembering something else. But I was told she was released ultimately. I don't know whether she's been charged with anything. I am always very suspicious of people the council arrests and removes from the public discussion for whatever reason, unless they're actually stopping the meeting. And in some cases, the meeting deserves to be stopped, but that's another story. Let's hear some more.
But I don't know the exact details on that. I was not present, actually, at the incident that, I guess, is the justification for the charge.
Re-entering the chamber or some nonsense.
Yes, I am. I was outside the chamber, and I did film part of the discussion that ensued between her and some of the city officials prior to her being arrested. But I did not. As I understand it, the arrest occurred at a different location than inside.